everybody, and welcome to the Row by Row Garden Show. Glad to have you with us this evening. I'm Travis.
And I'm Greg.
And got a great show planned for you tonight. We're going to do our show and tell segment as usual, have some tool of the week discussion, and then in our main part of the show this week, we're going to talk about the history of the wheel hoe, which is one of our kind of staple products, our first ever product, and our most popular. And then, of course, as always, we're going to answer some of your questions at the end of the show. If you have any questions during the show, put those in the comments, and we will get to them on next week's show. So, what are we eating this week, Mr. Greg?
Well, I got a little hungry, so I got me some pickled okra off the cabinet up there. Now, we love us some pickled okra. And we do two different types. We do the spicy type, and we do the sweet type. Now, I kind of lean more toward the spice, the sweet type, but I do believe I picked up a spicy bottle this morning, today.
It smells a little spicy.
Yeah, it's good, though, but it's a little spicy, but you can do it two different ways. If you like spicy or you do it sweet, however, I do believe the variety that makes the best pickled okra is going to be the red burgundy.
Is that right?
Yeah.
With the pickled okra, that's right there is about as big as you want them.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you what, that's good and spicy right there.
Yeah.
If you'll excuse me for a second, I'm going to get me a drink of water.
Go for it. Pickled okra is a great way to preserve the okra if you've got too much okra. And we definitely like pickling it. Eating it all kind of way. You gonna be all right?
I'm gonna be all right. Yeah, that's good though. That'll light you up right there. That'll bring it up to you. Get you going.
That's good. That's good. When did
now
y'all
with some good hoop cheese and a cracker? That makes a great snack.
When did y'all put that up last year?
This last year, yeah.
I like it for it's a good football game snack.
Yeah,
I like it for that.
Yeah,
always keep some in the fridge. If somebody shows up unexpectedly.
Yeah, bring out the pickled okra.
That's right. That's right.
Find out what they're made of.
Yeah. All right, and I'm going to show off these eggplants here we got growing, and we grow several different varieties. Some full-size varieties and some miniature varieties. And later in the show, we're actually going to answer a question about eggplants. These long, slender ones, I don't remember the specific name of this one, but they're traditionally referred to as the Japanese varieties.
Yep, they are.
These are work really well if you just want to slice them and fry them up. About the size of a cucumber. You can get these in the light purple here. You can get them in the dark purple as well.
Now, these don't get near as meaty on the inside as the big one does. You know, for the last 4 or 5 years, I have switched over and pretty much replaced the big traditional eggplant with this variety here.
Yeah, I like these. Are easier to pick, easier to cook. I like those a lot better. And then got these other three here. And these are bred to be miniature ones, and I don't know which is which, but they're called Hansel, Gretel, and Fairy Tale.
Mm-hmm.
And you got a mini, a normal eggplant color, the dark purple or the black, and then this one here has kind of the variegated color.
Yep.
To it, and then the white one here. And I really like these mini ones. They're prolific. The plants don't get too big and too out of control on you. And
prolific, that means they make a lot of
them. They make a lot. And so if you never tried these little ones, you know, try something different than your regular old Black Beauty eggplant every now and then. These, we really like these.
Yep.
And then lastly, I wanted to mention this guy right here.
Okay. You found him in your garden, I reckon.
I found him in my garden earlier today. And so I had seen on Deep South Homesteads channel, they was fussing about this weed on one of their videos of the week, and Danny called it mimosa weed.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what a lot of people seem to call it online, but the actual name is chamber bitter.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really grow in where you've been running the wheel hoe a lot, but it's going to grow between like your pepper plants that you got trellised up and stuff like that. And it grows really fast and it spreads bad. I don't know if you can see it on camera, but
look at the seeds there, seed pods there.
Seed pods there on the bottom of it, and that's what you don't want. as this thing start reproducing. But it doesn't really show up until it gets hot. It's more of a tropical weed.
You will not see it in springtime. You'll see it in summertime, and you'll see it a lot of times in a wet year a lot more than you will in a dry year. This is a troublesome plant in the landscape, in the turf, in your flower beds. This is going to be a bad one right here. And normally, we don't see it quite this tall in the landscape. In the garden situation, it can get up this big. Like Trav said, it's got the seed pods underneath the leaves there, so this thing can be very aggressive, very invasive. Now, the problem with this weed right here is controlling it. If you try to control this thing with any type of chemical, you're going to be in for some trouble. And I'll tell you the reason why. It's got a real waxy buildup on that leaf right there, and it will not hold any kind of pesticide. You spread it on there, it's going to roll right off. And it's one of the few weeds in the landscape situation that you can have a lot of problems with because you cannot hardly control it with any type of pesticides. Roundup will just roll off of it. Now, if you read your books, your textbooks and all that, there's a lot of things in there that they say will control this, and they're correct if you can get it to hold the leaf. Problem is you can't get it to hold the leaf. There are some silicone surfactants out there that possibly you could use to help with that, but in a garden situation, just take it out mechanically. That's going to be your best bet right there.
And the root system is not that bad. They're pretty easy to pull up, but you need to stay on top of them because they'll grow fast. And we've had one of the wettest years we've had in a long time.
Yeah, and you're going to have that weed there worse in a wet year. Now, the reason they call it little mimosa trees is because that's exactly what it looks like.
It looks like a mimosa tree. A mimosa tree is invasive and hard to deal with.
Right, but it's actually not a little mimosa tree. It's chamber bitter, and Nyuri is what we've called it in the past, or the very common name is chamber bitter. So if you have that baby right there, get it out of the way. It's a wet year plant, so you may not have it in a dry year, but it can be aggravating to deal with.
Yeah, so if any of y'all are dealing with this weed, let us know. Let us know what you're doing to control it. We'd like to hear if anybody else has seen this little guy around as well. And then now it's time for our tool of the week. What do we have this week?
This week we got the good old trowel. Now this trowel right here is different than the one you buy at the big box stores. This right here is made by a blacksmith friend of ours, and he pounds this baby out. What I like about it is the size of it, and you can also use it as a scoop. See if I can get around here where you can kind of see how it's rounded right there. Now he heat treats these things. He puts a nice little edge on them so they're sharp. It's got a great shape to it. Nice wood handle there, and of course the beautiful Hoss logo. This baby here is hand pounded out in the USA.
Yeah, he's got a little mold that he sets it on and
Swage block. Yep.
And gets that perfect bend to get some consistency there. And I've even seen videos where he has tested this, went to the big box store and bought a couple cheap ones, you know, $10, $15 trowels, and put them in a vise and broke them. And he couldn't, you ain't gonna bend that right there.
Will is a talented craftsman. He TIG welds the stock onto the blade right there, puts it in a nice handle here. It's just a great tool. It's one of my favorite tools that he makes.
And it's sharp. You won't find a trowel at the store that's got a nice sharp edge on it.
Yeah, so if you're out there in the garden and you see a weed, you need to get onto it. You got a sharp edge here, you can attack it well. Yeah.
Very timely tool for this time of year. We're spending a lot of time in the greenhouse getting stuff ready for fall. The good trowel comes in handy, scooping soil and moving it around.
High carbon steel. Now this isn't your junk steel from China. This is high carbon steel, easy to sharpen, but you want to keep some type of oil on it, keep it put out of the weather because it will rust. But it's that same steel that was made for tools years ago that's just easy to sharpen. It's good steel to work with and lasts you a lifetime if you take care of this baby.
Yeah, if you want to never have to buy another trowel, This is it. And one more thing, this thing, we got a little time before Christmas comes around, but this thing, it makes the best gift if you've got a gardener, vegetable gardener, any kind of gardener.
Yeah, if it's somebody that appreciates good tool like what we do. Now, if you got somebody that don't appreciate good tool, go buy them a $3 one at the big box store. But if they appreciate good tools and like to keep them and are proud of what they have, they'll really appreciate that.
All right, so check out that garden trowel. We'll get our producer to put a link up right there, and you can go see that for yourself. All right, and now into the main segment of today's show. We want to talk about the history of the wheelhoe. So this is something you really don't it's something that you don't see a lot of online. There's no really, not a ton of information online. You mainly gather this kind of information, talking to old timers and stuff like that. And we want to kind of go through some history with Planet Junior, talk about some of their attachments, talk about some things we did to modify their design and some attachments that we've used from them, and then some of our own unique ones as well.
Yeah, the wheel hoe was used a lot back in the late 1800s and the earlier mid 1900s here. It's a great tool. It kind of fell out of favor a little bit in the 70s because a lot of people got, well, they didn't garden a lot in the 70s and kind of fell out of favor there. And we didn't see a lot of them around. They wasn't any of them being manufactured during that period right here to speak of. So it kind of fell by the wayside. And then we picked it back up in the 2000s and kind of brought it back because we just thought it was a great tool. Now, I tell you what we did, we bought some off eBay and played around with them and found out just how great they were. So we said, heck, let's find out more about this. So to give you a little background on the wheel hoe was invented by an English engineer. His name was Jethro Tull back in the dadgum 1700s, a long time ago. He's the same guy that got a lot of the horse-drawn stuff, the plows and stuff like that. They've been a lot of those.
Not the rock and roll band, Jethro.
No. The engineer, Jethro, yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, he come up with a lot of this stuff here, and a lot of the American companies got a hold of this technology and kind of copied it and maybe made it better. Now, you have to understand, back in the 1800s and early 1900s, distribution was a problem. It ain't like it is today. Information, you know, spreading around was a big issue. So we found a lot of these things were more regional than they were based all over the United States. A company out of Pennsylvania called S.L. Allen Company started around the 1860s and 70s and that time frame there. And they was probably one of the most prominent companies out there that made wheel hoes, they made tractors, they made all kind of gardening tools. However, they were a lot of companies that made wheel hoes back in the day. They were very popular. Somebody on a Facebook group that I'm a part of said they were hundreds. Don't know about that, but they were a lot of them. I have some of the old catalogs and implement books, and they were a lot of different manufacturers out there. They were one west of the Mississippi called the Standard Tool Company, and it was based out of Iowa, and they were huge too on the west side of the United States. And that company has evolved and went through some mergers, and they're now the True Temper Company.
And they make you run of the mill,
yeah,
cheap hoe you find at,
yeah,
the big.
But I thought it was interesting that one, you know, back in the day they made a wheel hoe. So the wheel hoe has a very interesting history way back in the day, and I'm gonna tell you, back around New York State in the mid 1900s, the wheel hoe was used a lot on these small farms. They grew a lot of onions, they grew a lot of garlic, they had a lot of small truck farms up in New York State, Pennsylvania, up in there, and they used a lot of the Planet Junior stuff. They used some of the other manufacturers too, but primarily Planet Junior, I think, was probably one of the largest manufacturers of the wheel hoe. And I got one of the old catalogs here that Travis is going to show you.
Here's a picture of there's six folks there using a wheel hoe, cultivating some parsley for the Campbell Soup Company back in the day.
And if you see there, they were six guys with wheel hoes. And that's what we see. When we look at a lot of old pictures of small farms, labor was cheap. They had plenty of labor. So they would have 6, 10, 12 different people out there.
Have them staggered.
Staggered up in the rows with wheel hoes going down through there. The wheel hoes work wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they it's basically just a hoe on wheels. And they work great, and they have been instrumental in forming our agriculture in the early 1900s.
Yeah, and there's a lot of, you can see it, find a lot of old books out there that talk about how useful it was in the garden, and I kind of lost that a few decades there, but nowadays people have started to realize how useful they are, even though it's the 100-year-old design.
Well, a lot of your companies merged or went by the wayside over the years. And in 1967, the Planet Junior Company that was based out of Pennsylvania ceased to manufacture the wheel hoe. And they went through some buyouts here and there and bankruptcies and whatnot. It still is around today in a way different form. All they make today is just planters. The wheel hoes and the walk behind tractors are all a thing of the past. For the most part, in 1967, the Planet Junior quit making the wheel hoe. There was a company or two scattered around that picked it up for a year or two and it was a company called Red Pig out of California that mm-hmm. made a few in the 70s. But for the most part, they went by the wayside. And you could not buy a small wheel hoe in the United States. Well, around 2000 or so.
And before we go, just to be clear, a wheel hoe has a 15-inch wheel on it.
Or small wheel.
Or smaller yep. wheel. The tall ones you see at a lot of the big box stores, those are called high wheel cultivators. We're not talking about those.
Right.
Talking about a wheel hoe with a smaller wheel that has a toolbar that you can change attachments.
Yeah. It's a lot more versatile and it's a lot better than the high wheel. Now, I got a couple of high wheels that I've had for years, and they work good for what they designed for, and it ain't much.
They will work you to death.
They will work you to death. The low wheel, the low center of gravity on that Planet Junior wheel hoe, the 15-inch wheel hoe that we started out with, it just works great. It's versatile, it was well thought out, it was well tested, and it dadgum, it just works. So what we did was we took, around 2009, we took that Planet Junior and we reverse engineered it and brought it back to the marketplace, and we made a couple of small changes to it because it didn't need much, but we made a small couple changes to it to make it better, and we brought it back to the marketplace.
So what we took on the wheel, we put some oil impregnated bronze bushings there. We got away from some of the rivets they were using on the arms,
yeah.
using bolts. So the Planet Junior, they had their single wheel hoe, and then they had their double wheel hoe was like our new High Arch.
Right.
And if you look in their catalog, like right here.
Show them the cover of that catalog, yeah, what it looked like.
So these are the old catalogs. Now, if you can, sometimes on eBay, if you can get your hands on one of these, really good read material. Yeah. I mean, you can sit down and read them. And this was kind of the inspiration for us creating our wheel hoe manual that we now use with a lot of information there on using the attachments. But anyway, back to the Planet Junior catalog. Their packages, where our packages are called wheel deal, hoss deal, they were numbered. So you had the number 17, the number 13, the number 14 wheel hoe. It was the same wheel hoe, it was just a different set of attachments or a different yeah. collection of attachments.
Let's, if you like history, which I do, let's talk about 1934 catalog, Planet Junior catalog. There's 17, which was their most popular single wheel hoe package.
Which was, a single wheel hoe, sweeps, three cultivator teeth, and a plow.
Right. That thing sold for $7.35. $7.35 in 1934. Well, their number 12, which was their most popular package for their High Arch, or their double wheel hoe, it included a set of plows, four cultivator teeth, and a set of sweeps, and it sold for $10.25.
That's probably a lot of money back then.
Oh, it was. But the average person, I imagine, or the farmer, you know, he could afford to buy a few of these right here to get people out there and get some work done in his fields. Great tooling, and I'm going to tell you what, Planet Junior did a great job with their engineering, their manufacturing, everything. They just got some great tools. And even today, there's a lot of them still out there, and you'll find some on eBay from time to time. And I bought a few over the years because I just love the history of it. So let's talk about the way that manufacturing has changed somewhat from back in the day than what it is now, because that has been a little bit of an issue on the way we have evolved in some of the attachments for the Planet Junior.
Okay. Well, let me get to the attachments page here, and we can... So on the old Planet Junior, what we call sweeps, they call those their standard hose.
And that beat hose, some of them they call beat hose, yeah.
So this was kind of what they called their standard hose. This is our old sweep design. So when we first started, we were kind of mimicking the Planet Junior yeah. design. And we've since went away from this, and I'll let you tell everybody kind of why.
Yeah, what I did was I took the old Planet Junior, and I carried it out, and I had some guys look at it and help me along. And we stamped this part here, which is the blade part, which wouldn't look that big of an issue. But we sandcasted. We had to sandcast this part right here. Now, sandcasting in the United States has got to be a lost art. There's not near as many casting companies around as what there used to be, and the quality is just not there these days. Now, Planet Junior had some wonderful castings back in the day, and I'm almost positive they had their own casting plant, and they probably used virgin ore. And they used some good stuff. They did some great quality. This day and time, you just can't get the quality of casting that you could back then because there's not that many companies out there. And they're using recycled ore, and it's just inconsistent. Well, what we found was they would break. Sometimes we'd get them in, they'd be extremely hard. Sometimes we'd get them in, the metal would be extremely soft. So there's very inconsistent. It caused a lot of issues with our manufacturing. So we eventually got away from this particular design here, and we don't use any castings anymore.
Same reason we went away from this arm here on the plows and went to a plow that's just one piece.
Yeah, yeah. So we, you know, this day and time, we have a lot of manufacturing techniques that are a lot better than they used to be. We have lasers, we have press brakes, we can do forming, we can do a lot of things that we couldn't used to do back in the day. That being said, back in the day, they had a lot of great craftsmanship, and they could do some great castings and things like that. But we just had to evolve to the way the manufacturing is done today.
Right. Let's look at some more of these old attachments here. So we had the what we call sweep, what they call the hoe or the beat hoe, and then the cultivator teeth, which we've all seen are pretty similar between
them. Exactly. They're exactly the same as Plant Junior.
And the plow blades are pretty similar.
Yeah.
This one's kind of neat, though. This was the old Planet Junior one, and it's got this kind of little leveling arm on it right here.
A lot of people call that a landslide.
Landslide. Kind of keep your plow straight as you're running down the row there.
Now, it was an option in some of the Planet Junior catalogs to get these bigger plows, especially on their double wheel hoe. So they did have the option on some of their different packages to get these particular ones.
And then they had what they called a sweep is actually what we're going to call the wing sweep, this new one that we've showed you in a previous show that we're coming out with. So they called this just their basic sweep. And then a couple here that I really like. This was what they call their rake. And they had them three tine, looks like a five tine. They even got one that's a little longer than this.
Yeah.
And you could set these up, you know, as combination with other tools and stuff.
Yeah.
And those things would work really good for maybe incorporating some compost in the first, you know, a few inches of soil or whatever.
Yeah. Now this is all a casting right here, and I'm gonna tell you folks, this is some castings. You won't see this type of craftsmanship out there today. This is a good clean casting that was done, and they were just known for some great quality work there.
Yeah, and that's one of the challenges of us trying to come out with an attachment like this. You just can't really get them made to that quality anymore. And then similar to that, right? This is what they call their five-prong weeder attachment. So this is like if you took five of our single-tine cultivators and mounted them up here on one piece, get a little tool to scratch the dirt with, and it's got a little bar there where it locks those in. I really like that, that five.
Yeah. Yeah, and you can see here that was maybe a stamped out tooth there. Then you had some forging up here that makes this thing here that you put it on with. Just absolutely, yeah. That's good weight to it. That's a good tool.
That one would be more easier to replicate than the rake, but still difficult. And then finally they had the discs here, which work similar to our disc, but they're a little different the way they attach here.
Right.
So those are neat. The way they did them was put these on the high arch and put one on each side and straddle the plants that way.
Yep.
Now the Planet Junior, what we call our double wheel hoe, with the lower axle than the high arch, they didn't have a version of that.
No.
And so that was when we came out with the single and the double and made them interchangeable and convertible, that was something that was new.
Yeah. Now they did make one that was offset to the side. They had, you could take one of the wheels and offset it to the side. I really never did see the point in that. So we never have kind of went down that direction. I guess I tried them, I just didn't like them. So I didn't go there. So we made the double wheel, the small double wheel, and then we did got our single wheel there. And one other thing I want to touch on is the handles. Now the old Planet Juniors came standard with the pistol grip handles. And let's show a picture here of what a pistol grip handle looks like.
Okay.
The reason Planet, and I'm speculating on this because I got a little bit of insight there. The reason Planet Junior offered these pistol grip handles is you could upgrade or you could order, but you had to order specifically, you could get the steamboat handles that we offered standard on ours. The reason they did the pistol grip handles as a standard was because they was cheaper to manufacture.
Because you didn't have to bend them. You just don't cut have them bend. Out.
You just cut them out. So they offer that. Now, all their horse-drawn stuff, they had steam bent handles.
Mm-hmm.
And you could order a pair of steam bent handles for your wheel hub, but you had to do that separately. So if you're looking to, you know, take one of your old Planet Juniors and get it back original, go back with pistol grip handles. But we offer the steam bent handles, and I can tell you 9 out of 10 customers prefer that steam bent handle over they do the pistol grip handles. Now, if you're one of those that you think you want to have the pistol grip handles just like the old Planet Junior, hey, we got it. And you can order them like that. But I'm just telling you, most of our customers prefer that steam bent. And it costs more for us to manufacture that steam bent handle than it does the pistol grip. But now we think it's better.
Yeah, and that's why with any of our packages or our wheel hose, the steam bent is always the default. And if somebody requests the pistol grips, we'll certainly put them in there. They cost the same. We don't see that many people using the pistol grips. The people that are actually using their wheel hose, like you said, it's a lot of most people that buy the pistol grips are collectors that are restoring it and just kind of want to have it look like it did originally.
Right. So now, if you're interested in the history of the old Planet Junior stuff, I can tell you there's a group on Facebook called Planet Junior Wheel Hose and I believe it's Planet Junior.
It's a long name.
And Similar Wheel Hose. There is a group on there. You can probably just do Planet Junior coming with. And look here, there's a lot of guys on there that's a lot more knowledgeable than what we are. There's a guy named Blake on there. There's a guy named Larry on there. Jeff, all those guys on there are more than happy to share some of their information with you. So if you are interested in that and want to find out more, join that group. It's a great group of guys, and there's a lot of knowledge there.
Yeah, from time to time, I'll have customers or people on our email line send me an email and a picture of a wheel hoe and want me to date it and name it, and I always just direct them to that group because those guys on there are a lot better than I am. They're historians with regards to it, know a lot more about than I do. All right, so good talk on the wheel hoe. If you have any questions about wheel hoes or wheel hoe attachments, you put those in the comments. We'll get to those next week. And then let's get to our questions this week. And as always, if we answer your question on the show, send us an email to cusserve@hosstools.com and show them what they'll get there.
Let's do something different this week. Let's give them a hat.
A hat.
A hat.
Okay, up in the ante a little
bit. Up there, yeah.
So if we answer your question on next week's show,
one of these fancy Hoss
fine
tools.
Little hats.
Now, this ain't the average hat that you're going to go down there and buy at the Five and Dime. These are good hats. And
we've
got Hoss Leather Company makes these hats for us. And we'll be proud to send you one if we answer your question.
Yeah, so next week, two hats being given away. So pile up those questions and two lucky people will get one of those. All right, so our first question today comes from Deborah. I don't want to mess her name up. I think it's Shater, but Deborah on Facebook sent us a question. Wanted to know, could she remove the lower leaves on her eggplant, basically prune her eggplants like she would prune her tomatoes? You know, in the greenhouse situation, or if you got indeterminate tomatoes, you prune them to one stalk and to give them some airflow and productivity issues. Now with eggplants, I don't think you can necessarily prune them to one stalk like that, but I do prune my eggplants. Now, we plant these things in early spring and they'll grow from then until November when we get a frost. So the other week mine were just, I've got them on 4 foot row spacing, but they're just getting huge.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just come in there with the pruners and I just clean them up a little bit, get them more growing upright than sprawling out. So you can definitely trim those eggplants, leave you some leaves there, and they'll keep making and making. But yeah, I always trim them just to make it more manageable so I can get underneath them, keep the weeds down, And
yeah, and these bottom leaves are, you know, if they're real close to the ground, they're gonna get a lot of splatter on them from moisture and from sand and stuff, so they can help spread disease a little bit. So it could help a little bit with your disease controls, take them off.
Yeah, so definitely do that. And then our second question here comes from David Montgomery on our YouTube channel. And he says, over the past few years, he's been having a really bad issue with nematodes. Anything that we could do or suggest to lower that pressure? He's over in South Alabama.
Yeah, nematodes can be an issue, especially here in the South, but they can be a big issue on such things as okra. Is one of them is notorious for having nematode problems. Now, there happens to be a USDA researcher not far from us that does a lot of work with nematodes, and I've talked to her a couple of times, and she's had some luck with some cover crops. So growing some of the small grains, which such as rye, and in the winter time or the fall or the early spring growing the mustards, she's had pretty good luck with lowering the population with these cover crops using small grains and mustards, which I thought was interesting because, you know, you can incorporate these cover crops and get a lot of benefits out of them, but never really thought about as nematode control. So you can use these to help lower your population of nematodes with the mustards and small grains.
Yeah, and you can, if you pull up the plants and see those knots on the roots, you know you got nematodes. Not all nematodes are bad, only some of them are beneficial, but some of them are parasitic.
You know, rotation is a big thing with nematodes, and we preach rotation all the time, but using the cover crops and using rotation, never plant one thing, okra in the same place every year, rotate it around, that's going to help a lot. And you got another trick.
Yeah, so yeah, like you said, for crops that are sensitive to nematodes, move those things around, reduce your pressure. Another thing you can do is a process called solarization, and this involves using a clear tarp, not to be confused with the occultation with the black tarp. With solarization, you basically put a clear tarp on the ground.
You talk about clear tarp, you could use something like poly, like they use for a greenhouse cover. Like a 6 mil poly.
Yeah, the poly like they use for a greenhouse, the stuff they use underneath the houses.
Yeah.
Even the stuff painters use, you know, put down to keep getting paint on floors and stuff. That any of that would work, but you want it to be clear. You want that sunlight to be able to penetrate there. And what it's going to do is basically create a greenhouse effect on the garden soil. And in the heat of summer, they say it can get up to 140 degrees
wow.
down there, which is enough for a significant layer of that soil to heat it up enough to kill any nematodes or any other kind of, you know, hanging around pests and diseases
weeds.
That you might have, weeds.
Weeds, yep.
So they create a stale seed bed and also kind of sterilize that soil there. You're going to lose a little bit of your microbes that way, but it's a trade-off. You've got to get rid of those nematodes.
So the three things we would recommend would be solarization, rotation, and using some of these cover crops. And you may want to do a little research on your own there. Use some of the mustards, the small grains, cover crops, rotation, solarization. There you go.
Yeah, I would probably go in the order of, if I found some nematodes, I'd give that area a break. I'd probably solarize it for 6 to 8 weeks and then come behind and plant a cover crop, work that in, and that should give you some pretty good
yep.
success right there. All right, so thank you guys, and thank you for watching today. On next week's show, we're hoping to have interview from the Onion Man.
All right.
And so stay tuned for that, and we'll see you guys next week.
Take care.